It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Dave Baker here is in the studio watching on. It's kind of making me a little nervous. Feel like I've got a serious audience now, at least of one, which if you're tuned in, then we'll add to you and Dave Baker. But good morning. Welcome to Money Matters, not the Home Fix It show. And listen, there's so much to talk about today. Trump sends another shockwave to markets, a major shockwave to markets. Tariffs, 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum. Exactly what U.S. steel producers have been wanting for a long time. For years, they've been talking about this. Listen, the market did not like it, as you can imagine. For the week, the Dow down 3%, the S&P 500 down 2%. And it wasn't just tariffs that the markets did not like this week. We had Powell speak. That's Jerome Powell, new head of the Fed. He talked about how solid the U.S. economy was. And the possibility of four rate hikes instead of three. Then the Senate's infrastructure deal may be on its heels. And of course, tariffs. So we've got, I can't help but say, I think of in alliteration or acronyms, in this case, alliteration, I think is what this is. But so Powell, politics and protectionism roiling markets today. But I think the most interesting piece of the equation that really surrounds tariffs, and that's what I want to talk about today. And you're probably thinking, oh man, another ridiculously boring subject, but it's not. I promise you, when you dive deep into what tariffs mean, and then particularly in the context of steel, there's something about steel in America. There's something about metal, the metal that has effectively built our country and shielded our military. There's something more than economics at play. And that's the topic of today. I did more updates on the rule of, I keep talking about this, and maybe this is going to be a theme for the year, but I fully recreated the 4% rule. The William Bengen study was published in 1994 using data through 1992. Our team at CIA, we recreated the entire study with data all the way up until 2017. And there are some additional things that I learned as we continued to work through the data over the last couple of weeks when it comes to your withdrawal rate. So today I also want to touch on two areas that I need you to know about. So I have two new important withdrawal rate rules of thumb. One I'm going to call the Buffett zone, and two I'm going to call the danger zone. So I very much hope we can get to that today as well. But I want to first start with, again, this fascinating topic around tariffs. Interestingly, you would think that every single thing we make in America, we bring, or everything we need to build anything that's steel related, that it comes from overseas. You'd think that, oh, well, obviously everything gets imported or else tariffs wouldn't be needed. But interestingly, we make about 80% of the steel that we need right here in the United States. But because we import the other, call it 20% from other countries, we're importing from, well, some of the countries, and again, it's not just China. In fact, China is low on the list. So number one is Brazil, then Mexico, then South Korea, then Russia. China is number 11 on the list of suppliers to the United States of the 20% that we import. So we're importing steel, some are from our friends and some not so much. So a portion of where we get our steel around the world, they aren't exactly our best friends. And some of those places like China and Russia have support from within. So government support, state support for their steel industry. So obviously that allows them to have either lower cost steel or even lower quality steel. And then it puts pricing pressure on steelmakers around the world. And it hurts pricing power for U.S. steelmakers. And I'm going to tell you a story about, and good morning, by the way, welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. We're off to the races here on a Sunday morning. Of course, we will get your calls and answer your financial questions. Ryan Ely is here. He'll take your call and figure out if we can give you some direction. Usually we can. Most of the time we can give you at least direction. So the number here in the studio, and we will, of course, go to the phones today, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750. And a quick, well, I'm not even going to get to that. I will have a programming note on the Retire Sooner book website in at some point today, but I'm going to keep going here. So I grew up, and this is just a story about my youth. I grew up in a town called Coatesville, Pennsylvania. And I had a few different locations around. My parents moved a couple different times. My parents were divorced, so one moved over here and one stayed here. But my zip code that my father still lives in to this day is 19320 from where I am from. That's Coatesville, Pennsylvania. It's southeastern PA. It's about an hour, call it hour and a half, depending on how you drive. My dad, a good hour and a half. He never went beyond about 52 miles an hour. But about an hour, hour and a half from Philadelphia. So Philly is obviously to the east. Coatesville directly to the west of Philadelphia. And then not too far from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. For those of you who watched the movie Witness with Harrison Ford. That was like the coolest thing that ever happened when we were kids. Oh, Witness was filmed right near here. So I remember Coatesville from, and I still think of Coatesville as these rolling hills and farms where I lived or where I grew up. And when I go back home, I still think of Coatesville for the most part as these rolling hills and farms. My dad's still a veterinarian, still practicing, he still owns Brandywine Valley Veterinary Hospital. He's owned it since I was a little kid, still hasn't retired. And that's mostly how I still remember Coatesville. But every once in a while, as a kid, we would drive through the actual town of Coatesville. And we'd leave the farmland. And if you would drive through, and to this day, you drive through the town of Coatesville, it is home to Lukens Steel. Lukens Steel, it's the oldest. And I didn't know this really as a kid, but I obviously learned later on in life. Lukens Steel is the oldest steel company in the United States. And still to this day, one of the largest in the nation. And Lukens actually started as the Federal Silting Mill back in 1793. If we go back in history a little bit, on a little stream that I remember very well called Buck Run. Run is in stream, a few miles south of Coatesville, Pennsylvania. So it eventually became Brandywine, Iron Works, all those cool names back when companies had names for exactly what they did. Hey, we make nails, so we're going to be called the Brandywine, Iron Works, and Nail Factory. And ultimately, after a bunch of name changes, was within the Lukens family, and it became Lukens Steel Company, L-U-K-E-N-S. In the late 1990s, it became Bethlehem Steel, and eventually, and these are the names you know, eventually rolled up into ArcelorMittal, which is this massive global steel company that bought plants all over the world. They're based out of Luxembourg. But growing up, I knew Lukens as just this massive steel plant, and in itself looked like this, like you drive through, it's this yellow brown rust colored city. And it really was. It's let's call it hundreds and hundreds, or if not thousands of acres. That's how large this plant was. And it was, of course, a huge part of the local economy. They made steel that went into Baldwin locomotives. Again, remember, this thing started in the late 1700s. Huge part of so Baldwin locomotives, battleship armor for tanks and for the U.S. Navy, for tanks and battleships for the U.S. Navy, steel for aircraft carriers and nuclear subs, plates for the Walt Whitman Bridge in Philadelphia. So when I was a boy in the early, let's call it in the 70s and the early 1980s, And well into the 90s. So really, when I remember Lukens, the plant was always in financial, had always had financial issues. And at one point, they fired 22% of their manufacturing workers, and half, and this happened like overnight one time. Half of it's white collar jobs, just in one massive downsizing. And there were walkouts, there were always strikes, like constant struggles. And that's what I remember as a child. And maybe that's the same thing that politicians and Americans have seen over the years. The plight of steel. The plight of the industry that makes steel in the United States. And it's the industry that's the backbone. If there is a backbone of our nation, it is steel. Our railways, our military, our bridges, our buildings, our infrastructure in America. So these tariffs, the Bush steel tariffs in 2002, and now the Trump steel tariffs of 2018, they have deep roots in emotion. You know, you think about this stuff as a kid. You think about your dad coming home and his hands are, you know, messy because he worked in the steel mill. I mean, that's America. So it's an emotional topic along with the economics. And now the tariff, which is, of course, simply just tariffs, just an extra tax on something, some specific imported good or some specific category of goods, which makes anything imported into that same category more expensive. And the aim, of course, is to help domestic producers compete. There is no evidence, by the way, that the Bush tariffs helped for steel at all. In fact, it's widely believed that it actually cost between 20,000 and 200,000 jobs, and it ended in a year after it started. It started in 2002, ended in 2003. But I know that's what the administration is trying to do. They say, look, this is an industry that has been down on its luck for a very long time, but it may be too late to help. I'm going to talk about some more of the economics about this in just a minute. So stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. If you ever miss pieces of the show, you can find us on iTunes, the podcast, Money Matters with Wes Moss, or Wes Moss Money Matters. You can just listen at WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. More Money Matters, talking steel in America, straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. We're talking steel. We're talking tariffs in America. So, we go back to a little economic history. If you go back to 2002, we know that Bush put about a 30% tariff on various steel products and steel in the steel industry, and it's widely believed that it didn't really do much except it actually didn't help. It cost us jobs between 20 and 200,000 jobs, and then it ended pretty quickly. So that is why I'm saying that it might be a little too late to help. I just told you the story of where I grew up and kind of the emotion behind living in a next to a steel town. And it kind of, I think of where I grew up, I think of it as farmland and rolling hills and horses and cows, but then the town itself was literally a big steel plant. And it had constantly had economic issues and problems for, call it, 20 years. So there was a lot of negative connotation around the economy of working in the steel industry. And that's happened all over America. And here's some of the, in my experience growing up in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, you're really going to see that all over or anywhere there's the steel industry in the United States. And this is why. So let's think about some of these statistics. Now, the steel industry directly employs about 140 workers, according to BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics. About a half century ago, 50 years ago, there were 650,000 people directly employed in the steel industry. That's a 78% drop. But during that same period of time, this is what's fascinating, worker output quintupled. So we dropped 80% of the employment, yet the output is five times what it was 50 years ago. So the steel sector has actually been one of the fastest growing manufacturing industries over the last couple decades, three decades, behind only the computer, software, and equipment industries. At the same time, steel employment has plummeted. So I'm not sure who to blame. Is it really China when we import less than 2% of our steel for them? I doubt it. We're talking about the emotional and the economic issues that surround steel, metal, in America. You're listening to Money Matters, more Money Matters. Your calls and questions right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB, straight ahead.
Moss. It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning. Talking steel. We're talking tariffs here in the United States. 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum. What's it going to do to the economy? What is this? Is this political? Is it emotional? Is it an economic issue? How big of an impact does it have on markets? And I don't want to, we're going to continue to talk about this right here, right now on Money Matters. A couple of thoughts here. We're going to talk a little bit more about steel, and then I want to go to the phone. So give us a call here in the studio. I don't care where you are in the United States, if it's California or Texas or Michigan or the great New England Northeast where they're still digging out from a storm, or if you're from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, we're talking about Lucan Steel today. Give us a call right here in the studio. If you're outside of Georgia, it's 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's 1-800-WSB-TALK. Again, if you've got a question that has to do with your portfolio, whether it's a question about guns in your portfolio and how much impact or exposure you have inside of an ETF or a mutual fund, we're happy to talk that through. Maybe it's just a question about your TSP plan. Hey, I've got all these options within TSP. What do I do? Maybe it's a 403B question or a 401k question, whether you're a teacher or you work in corporate America or you're a small business owner and you're thinking about retirement. Hey, that's what we're here for on Sundays. It's by far the best part about the show. Yeah, I love yelling, jumping up and down about the economic issue of the day. Today, that is certainly steel tariffs. But really, by far the best part of Money Matters is trying to help you answer your questions when it comes to your own personal situation. Husband, wife, you're looking at each other. Hey, honey, what should we do? Hey, let's call this Wes guy. At least we'll get an objective. And I promise you, we will give you objective answers here on this show. I still believe that we are probably the last bastion of purely objective financial advice left on the radio. So if you're outside of Georgia, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you're right around here, Atlanta, Georgia, Sandy Springs, Cumming, Conyers, you name it, Decula, 404-872-0750 is the number here in the studio. We will go to the phones in a minute. Again, give us a call. Phone line's open, 404-872-0750. Now, let me get back to what's happening when it comes to tariffs and steel. And we've talked about this all morning, and we're trying to figure out what ultimately the impact is. And here's what we saw this week. So we talked about how there's been this tremendous technological change within steel, or the industry itself. And politically, it's really easy to blame the countries that produce low-cost steel. It hurts all of our domestic manufacturers. And when we look around, and it's been a rough, and I grew up in this exact scenario where you look around and you think, gosh, it's such an important part of the economy. It's American. This is America. And here we are seeing these companies, these steel manufacturing companies, get hurt. I don't like it. You don't like it. It's hard to just do nothing. But I'm not sure that technology isn't a bigger gravitational force down when it comes to industry. Again, the output has we've seen jobs drop by almost 80% in direct steel manufacturing jobs, and we've seen output quintuple over the last, call it, several decades. So I'm not sure that technology isn't the bigger drag here or the bigger gravitational force lower. But it's a much easier to get emotional against an adversarial nation than it is a less visible robot or a line of source code. And that's really what's changed so much of the industry. The impacts could have more, or the impact could be more on the 2 million other jobs in industries that use steel intensively, by the way, means it represents 5% or more of a company's input to the cost of their goods. This week, Wilbur Ross, he was on CNBC. This week, he was holding up a can of Campbell's soup. I love Campbell's soup. Evidently, the tariff only raises the cost of one of those cans of Campbell's soup by 0.65 of a cent, less than a penny. But here's what happened in markets. So if you look at from Wednesday to Friday of this past week, U.S. steel, after the announcement, was up 6%. So good for steel makers. Good for aluminum makers. Century Aluminum, up 3% Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But for steel users, Ford, down 2%. Boeing, down 5.5%. Caterpillar, down 9%. And shares of Campbell Soup, down about 4.5%. So shares of steel makers up, shares of steel users down. Ultimately, there's this fear of global trade wars. We tax this, and then they tax that just to retaliate. And then it escalates into some giant protectionist dogfight. And I think that it's more of an emotional issue, though, than political issue. And I think it's a little less an economic issue. It might be a market issue, at least in the short term. We saw that this week. We saw the direct impact on steel makers and the steel users. But overall, when it comes to this big overarching argument of steel and tariffs and trade wars, I think that the overall long-term impact on both our economy, the economy here in the United States, and markets, for that matter, will end up being more bark than bite. We're going to go to the phones here. We've got lots of great calls on hold. Right before we do that, programming note about Retire Sooner book. So you can retire sooner than you think. The book that I have published and just put up its own dedicated webpage so that you don't have to go to Amazon to buy the book. So this is totally separate from Amazon. It's actually less expensive than going to Amazon. So we just updated that website, retiresoonerbook.com. You can get the paperback version for under $10. You can get the audio CDs. Audio, you can listen in the car for $12.99. You put them together for under $20. You can get, and this is what I see a lot of couples do. Somebody's reading the book. Somebody wants to listen to it in the car. It's easier to do it that way. So if you get both of them together, it's under $20. So you get a Retire Sooner bookmark. You get 8 CDs. You get an ebook bundle with 101 retirement tips, answers to the most commonly asked retirement questions. So you get all of this together delivered free with every book order at checkout. There's a companion workbook included, plus 2 of our most popular ebook titles. And then the company that's doing this for us, we've got all this set up so that if you don't like it, just send it back. It's a 30-day, no question asked, get your money back if you hate it or if you don't even like it at all. So all of that at retiresoonerbook.com is the website. Again, believe it or not, less expensive than Amazon. I think Clark Howard would be proud of this deal here. Again, the website, you can find the book or the bundle. You can buy 10 of these things all at once. Give them out to your friends. It's spring break's coming up. Give it out to, you're going on spring break with your parents. They're in their late 50s or early 60s. Maybe it's time to, they're starting to think about retirement. Get them a couple books. RetireSoonerBook.com. Is the website. Again, retiresoonerbook.com. We're going to the phones here. Ryan, where are we headed? There's so much to talk about. He just points me in a direction and I go. George from Monroe, what's going on? How can I help?
Hey, good morning, Wes. Real quick question for you. Like, our phones are lit up. My company has decided to take their portion of the 401k contribution that they kick in and pay it in one lump sum at the end of the year, provided you're still employed with them. So, needless to say, that extra money isn't working for me anymore as it used to.
Wait, let me just clarify this, George. They're, instead of matching a few times a year, they're putting in one just once a year you're getting a match. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Okay. Instead of every payroll period, one time a year, you're right.
Yep.
So now my money, that extra money is not working for me as hard anymore. So I'm wondering if it's wiser to move it to maybe just a Roth IRA instead of keeping the 401k or what?
Well, okay. So here's, I think, what George, you're getting at here. So if you're listening to George's question, I think you're probably smartly thinking, you know, listen, when markets are gyrating, they're going up and they're going down, it's great to be able to put money away and actually buy when markets are down. Like right now, we've seen a correction. If I'm putting my own money in and my company's matching it every let's say month, I'm dollar cost averaging lower and lower, which ultimately over time is a great strategy. What George is saying here is that he's not quite getting that advantage because they're only doing it once a year. And who knows, when you finally get the money from them, you can be buying when the market's up. It's not necessarily giving that dollar cost averaging that you're looking for, or methodical dollar cost averaging. And honestly, George, it's okay, because you are putting your 401k money in and you're doing it every paycheck. And that's really what matters. Remember, your contribution to this thing has a much greater impact than the company match. Unless you've got the most benevolent company in the world, most companies that I see do, you know, they try to make it sound better, and they say 50% of 6%, it's really 3%. That's all they're matching. Or 4%, yeah. Not a big deal. What's a big deal, George, is what you are putting in, and you're putting it in methodically, and you and your contributions are dollar cost averaging, and that's really what matters. You know, I 80% or 75% or more of your 401k money by the time you're 60 is going to be your own contributions grown and compounded over time, not your company. So don't be discouraged by their timing on this thing. Don't let it stop you even for a second of getting the pre-tax money put in.
Super. Thanks.
All right, man. George, thank you. Have a great rest of your day. 404-872-0750. We're going to continue to go to the phones here. Steve from Athens. What's going on, man? How can I help?
Hey. I'm mid-60s, retired. Have a pension, Social Security, and I have some U.S. savings bonds. Last week you were talking about that.
Some double E bonds, yeah. Or double E, or are you talking treasury bonds?
Double E.
Okay.
Double E, when I was working. So I have a total of 75, and from the years of late 90s to 2005. And just by the way the market's been fluctuating, I'm thinking, here's some of the key, Wes. I don't have any heirs, so being single, don't have children, things like that. So I'm thinking about cashing those out and putting them in either some kind of other short-term bond or equity, and because I don't want to wait around 10, 15, 20 years on some of those. I just don't want to wait around for wait till they mature. So what's your thought on that?
Yeah, so again, you could always go, what Steve's talking about here are double E bonds or double E or just E savings bonds, which you can find at treasurydirect.gov is the website. And you can find out more information about them. You can see what the rates are, if they're still paying. Again, this is treasurydirect.gov. And again, here's what my thought on these is, that if you've had these for a long time and you cash them out, it's a pretty big, you're going to get taxed because everything is accrued. If you haven't paid tax on it, could be a big tax bill. So how long have you had these things?
Well, I'd say a quarter of them, Wes, are late 90s. And then into the 2000s.
So what kind of rate? So the interest rates on those are pretty decent.
Well, that's the other thing that I've not done the math on it. So
okay. Maybe, here's my thought here. Before you do anything or cash things out, see what each one is paying. I mean, if you look at double E bonds, you look at I bonds or those inflation type bonds that you could have gotten, they all have different rates. And at some period of time, if you go back in history, rates were a lot higher for most of what you've probably bought than they are today. So I would be careful before you cash these things out. See what they're paying before you do that. Go to treasurydirect.gov. You're listening to Money Matters. More of your calls and questions straight ahead.
And WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates 4 times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 tonight, for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
You're listening to Money Matters. We're back right to the phones. Linda from Griffin. Linda, what's going on?
Hey, I just wanted to say people need to stop worrying. The United States was built on backbone. I mean, if we don't get to deal with China the way we were, that's okay. Let's make it in-house.
Well, we do.
We made of.
You know what's but what's interesting about this, Linda, and I think that if you most Americans, the way politically, it's like, well, it sounds like we import almost all the steel comes from China. But it, but interestingly, it really doesn't. It now we do have it. There's a big impact from what they.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was actually thinking about the soy. You know, don't we still pay farmers not to farm?
Well, we certainly still have plenty of subsidies.
Yeah,
you're right. You're absolutely right. But here's the thought: is that Linda? I think that it naturally, and that's why I talked about this today. I mean, I think there's a lot of emotion tied to a couple of these really traditional industries that really we were built on, like you're saying, farming, steel. And that's why there's emotions really run high, particularly on this topic. I mean, I grew up, you know, half a mile from one of the largest and the oldest steel company in America. Now, by the way, it's owned by a company in Luxembourg for all that matters. So, but we need to have this global competition. We need, as a country and an economy, to be able to shop around so our iPhones don't cost $8,000 a piece. A lot more on this when Money Matters returns in the 10 o'clock hour. Straight ahead.